The single most respected voice in the pandemic is Dr. Anthony Fauci.
The man who's become known as America's doctor.
The nation's top infectious disease expert, Anthony Fauci.
You are seen to many as a superhero.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, American hero and New York Yankee fan.
You've done so much for this country in terms of this crisis, so I really appreciate your insight.
Who better to give us answers that we can trust than Dr. Anthony Fauci?
The perfect person to answer our questions today. Joining us now, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, appreciate your candor.
Dr. Fauci, appreciate the candor.
We appreciate your service to this country.
We appreciate your service.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
Greatly appreciate your service to America.
Thank you for your 37 years of service, I believe, to seven presidents, and thank you for your work over the past year.
The great news is you're sticking around in the Biden administration. We are so grateful to you, Dr. Fauci, for everything you do.
Thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you very much for everything that you do.
Thanks so much for the work that you do.
Thank you very much for the reassurance, and as always, for all of your public service. Thank you, Dr. Fauci.
Thank you for all your guidance this past year, and it's greatly appreciated.
Dr. Fauci, on behalf of all of our viewers here in the U.S. and around the world, thanks very much for doing what you're doing. Thanks very much for joining us. Please thank your entire team as well. We are all grateful.
Get your rest because we need you.
You are one of the busiest scientists in the country right now. It is an honor to have some of your time to help us understand what is going on. I know a lot of people have a lot of questions, so we appreciate your time, sir.
We need people to continue to have faith in science. So thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you for being straight with us. Thank you for being able to come on. You will always have this show as a platform.
Sir, whenever you can be here, we'll have you. It's always an honor to have time with you. Thanks for being here.
It's good enough for you, sir. It's good enough for me and my family. So thank you, Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci, thank you for keeping it straight. Thank you for fighting the good fight.
I am sincerely appreciative that you are not walking away from this post. You make us smarter and safer and better every day. Thank you so much, Dr. Fauci.
Dear.
Sandy Rios with you. And if you're like me, you thought, well, that will end in a minute, right? That'll end soon here, right? No. And of course, that's not everything that was, every word of praise that was given to Anthony Fauci by press. It was in print. It was on radio. It was in ads. It was by politicians. And so the, you know, we're used to how the press works. We see them manipulating and, you know, pushing stories and denying others and criticizing people that we love and believe in and hating, you know, and loving people that we don't like. And certainly they loved Fauci. They loved him. And at the same time, they created the narrative. They helped him that that everyone had to be vaccinated. You have to be vaccinated. And if you didn't get vaccinated, you were a fool. It was that cacophony of voices, that you have to wear a mask, that you have to social distance, all of that. All those voices are the ones that made Americans feel that this was true and they had to follow. And it all centered around this little guy named Dr. Fauci. And now we know that Dr. Fauci not only manufactured and used the Wuhan lab for gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function means that there's a virus, there's a disease, and you make it worse. You do things in the labs to make it worse, and then you are able to infect people with it. Maybe for warfare purposes, that's what you might think. But no, I think they had other ideas in mind. We think maybe even it was just so they could develop vaccines and make a lot of money. This was big business, and Fauci is at the center of it. And tomorrow, Dr. Anthony Fauci will be on Capitol Hill. I'm talking to you on July the 28th. So he'll be in on July the 29th, testifying on Capitol Hill. Senator Rand Paul has just released an extensive file of Anthony Fauci's diaries. I think just hold on to your seat, because there's not a person listening to my voice who was not affected by this man and that media and how they lied to us about the COVID virus, the COVID vaccine, the treatment, all of it. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. But first, there are a lot of lies in our culture. And of course, one of those lies is that abortion is nothing. We've been hearing that for years. It's just this tiny blob. It's a woman's right. It's her body. And the baby doesn't have any rights, or maybe no body, just a body at her disposal to destroy if she chooses. Just lots of lies, lots of twisting. And it started a long time ago, I guess, maybe in the garden those lies started. But abortion has done so much harm, too. It's just done so much harm. So many babies killed. So many mothers' lives destroyed by their depression and anxiety and sadness over looking back on the decision they made, losing children. And many of them were infertile, and they look back, and that was the one baby they had, or the two or the three. It's really so destructive. And so we're going to do something redemptive, and that's why I work with Preborn. And Preborn provides ultrasounds to moms who are pregnant and concerned about being pregnant for whatever reason. And once they see their baby on the screen in that ultrasound, most of those girls and women decide to keep the baby or to adopt it out, but not to kill it. It's just a wonderful thing. It's just wonderful, the thing that Preborn does. And I always say that's God's way. That's a redemptive way of reaching out to women and persuading them to keep their babies. Well, if you would like to help Preborn, it's $28 for one ultrasound. It's $28. And you just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, this may not be one of the happiest shows we've ever done, but it's really important to all of us to know the truth about this. I know that some of my friends, you know, we can't even talk about it because they decided to take the vaccine. But I think there's more and more a willingness to open up. You know, you think about your grandchildren, your children, people that you encourage to do it. And then there are some of you who never did take it and you received a lot of harassment. You got a lot of pain during the time when this was happening. So all of us need to know, though, whatever choice you made, what the truth is. And that's what we're going to bring to you on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Ideological rigidity, I think. There's no reason not to get vaccinated. Why are we having red states and places in the South that are very highly ideological in one way, not wanting to get vaccinations? Vaccinations have nothing to do with politics. It's a public health issue. It doesn't matter who you are. The virus doesn't know whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. For sure, we know that. And yet there is that divide of people wanting to get vaccinated and not wanting to get vaccinated, which is really unfortunate because it's losing lives.
Oh, really? All right, Dr. Fauci. So is he shaming those ignorant Southerners who have political persuasions that are not his and choose to not be vaccinated? He waxes eloquent about how many lives that cost. Well, back in January of 2020, Bruce is with me. Honey, thank you for joining me. We have a few memories about COVID, don't we?
We sure do.
Yeah. So we'll just give you a little taste, and then we're going to get into the things we've learned about Fauci from these diaries. We were at CPAC in Washington, D.C., at National Harbor, actually, in Maryland. And I go there every year, and you've heard me talk about it. I bring you clips from it and conversations. I do lots of interviews. And it was we got home, and some people started to get a little bit sick. And the first thing we know, the news is saying that there was this virus. I mean, I'm talking about immediately when we got home, this virus is killing people in China. And we start seeing these pictures of people dropping dead in the streets. Do you remember that? Remember these pictures of the hospitals overrun? And then we heard that the news told us, we think it broke out because of CPAC. It happened at CPAC. Do you remember that, Bruce?
Yes, they called it a super spreader event and started saying that CPAC had, because people were there from all over the country, that when they disperse at the end of CPAC, that CPAC was responsible for spreading COVID virus across the United States.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, CPAC was one of the most strongest conferences in America for conservatives. Matt Schlapp, the chairman, strong supporter of President Trump, and strong conservative, and everybody that comes is very conservative, and so really good target. How convenient. So it was CPAC's fault that it got spread. We did remember that.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
Yeah, and so it's true. I did get sick. I got sick. I was sick for a couple of days. And then we can't go into all the details of this, but most of you who listen will remember that in July, Bruce got very, very sick, and it was really traumatic for us. I wrote about it in my book. Had to put him in the hospital. By that time, they were taking people in and not letting you see them. And that's what happened with Bruce, and I almost lost him. And I think that one of the things that saved him is I begged that they give him ivermectin. Now, they ended up doing that. That's a whole—I don't really want to go into that story, but that is our story, and Bruce did survive. But they were getting ready to put the ventilator on him, and the doctor told me they didn't think he was going to live. It was that bad. And so we have strong feelings about COVID. We had both chosen not to take the vaccine. And I remember, if you have listened to me for a long time, you might not remember this, but early on, I just wasn't sure about that vaccine. I did not say in the early months of this, don't take that vaccine, because I'm not a doctor, and how could I make that decision for you? But for us privately, we refused to take it. Bruce, why did we refuse to take it?
Well, I think that we looked at what we saw as the outcome of whether you took the vaccine or not, and we knew people who took the vaccine, and they still got sick. And you think, well, what good is it then? And even the proponents of the vaccine, many of them were saying at best what the vaccine would do is shorten the time you were sick if you contracted the virus. But they were very uncertain as to side effects, whether it really did do anything to stop COVID. I mean, there were so many question marks that I think that we just said, before we stick something in our bodies that might have long-lasting effects to the negative, we don't want to do this. And there were signs starting to appear early on that this vaccine could be very lethal given a particular person's set of circumstances medically. I mean, these myocarditis, which is heart disease, if you remember, there were athletes, people in great shape, say 20, 21 years old, dropping dead in the middle of a game.
Right
after having been vaccinated. And, can we say it was because of the vaccine positively? Probably not. But can we say probably? I would say absolutely.
It's certainly that all developed over time, Bruce. But I think early on, from my perspective, the propaganda and the pushing, the offering children candy and giving away and paying people was so offensive to me, and it just didn't set well. I thought, this is not right. Something is wrong here. Something is wrong. And so eventually, then we learned all the things you're talking about and other things as well. And of course, I interviewed a lot of the people that were in opposition, from Pierre Corey to Dr. Littell, who was a doctor in Florida who just stood strong and almost lost his license. And then, of course, Dr. Robert Malone was a frequent guest. That's how I got to know him. So we covered that, and they were doing all kinds of research about it. And by the time we were, I don't exactly know when, but I'd say maybe 6 months into it, I was actually saying, don't take it. I had servicemen calling in who had taken it and had been injured. And then I had others calling in begging me to help them. One young officer with a family, captain with like 4 or 5 kids, he was going to lose his position if he didn't take the vaccine. And he begged me for help, and I did what I could. But I found that the members of Congress were weak. There were very few that took a stand. Rand Paul was one of them. But the others were just, I don't know. They just wouldn't help. The guy who was the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, I think he's from Tennessee. I wish I could remember his name. I called him out so many times because he refused to stop the forcing of military members in all branches to take that vaccine.
Well, for me, I can say that I think what really turned the tide for me against the vaccines was what I perceived as kind of silliness or arbitrariness. I mean, you're talking about social distancing, 6 feet away from someone. Well, think about that. If somebody sneezes and they don't cover their nose, it goes a lot further than 6 feet. What difference does it make if you're standing near them or 6 feet away? The mask, this was really what pushed me over. They kept telling us that these regular cotton masks were effective at preventing the spread of the virus. If you went online and you looked up the size of a particle that was transmitting COVID-19, it was absolutely minuscule. I mean, it's so small. And then you look at the what I would call the effectiveness of these cotton masks as being able to screen out or stop this COVID virus particle. It was ridiculous.
It's laughable.
It was laughable. It's like, remember they said it's like trying to keep a mosquito out with a tennis court net.
Chain
link fence. It just doesn't work.
Well, and as a matter of fact, there was so much hypocrisy. Fauci himself changed his mind all over the time. I used to play these clips for you, those of you who listened to me then. This was Fauci in March of 2020 on masks. The Fauci who later said, you have to mask, you have to mask. Even people have to mask everywhere. We saw people riding their bikes wearing masks. We saw people driving cars by themselves wearing masks. It was absolutely ridiculous. But Fauci himself what did he say about it in March 2020? This is clip 10.
And right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask, and they keep touching their face.
Yeah, but then later he's all in. He's all in shaming you if you don't wear a mask, if you don't social distance. Flying became a nightmare.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
I'll tell you when I really, I actually have a date that really turned me around if I had any doubts, and that was July 23rd of 2020. Fauci is a big New York Yankees fan, and the Yankees were in Washington, D.C. to play the Washington Nationals in a baseball game. And they were not hardly allowing anyone into this game. The players, the managers, the announcers, and very, very few spectators. But Anthony Fauci was allowed to come and throw out the first pitch, which I got to say he looked like a real nerd when he threw it out. But that's beside the point. So he throws out the first pitch. Then he goes and takes his seat. There's no one else in the stadium hardly. But there's Anthony Fauci and a woman and another man, all three sitting together next to each other with their masks down. This was right after he had absolutely railed about the necessity. You must wear a mask or you're putting other people in danger. Remember, they would use that on you. If you don't wear a mask, maybe it's okay. Maybe you think it's okay for you, but what about other people? So they shamed us. And here was Fauci sitting in that game.
And laughing.
They were carrying on. And if you go back to that first clip you opened the show with, he was absolutely in love with the attention, the adoration, the power he was wielding at that point.
Well, we'll get to that because we actually have proof of that now. We can assume, we assumed, but we didn't know, but we know now. Bruce, the other thing that was so horrible, they claimed that those of us that didn't get the vaccination were causing others to get sick. Vaccine deniers. What was the name they called us? It was horrible. I mean, they really slandered people like us.
Yeah, the anti-vaxxers. They had all kinds of terrible names.
Yeah, but we were actually causing it to spread. And so, and then later we find out, and all of you know this, don't you, that the people that got the vaccine actually got then COVID several times. They had lost their immunity, and they were the ones spreading it. We were the spreaders of the disease because we didn't have the vaccine. They did horrible things to people, and in the process, of course, the worst thing was I think 1.2 million Americans died, and that's just from COVID. That's not from the vaccine. We don't know what that number is. The vaccine injuries. I mean, can you imagine what that number is? And I believe that there are people now still suffering. I'm sorry, I just can't get past this, but I hear all the time that people are dying of various cancers and they're young, or dying of heart failure, or dying of, you know, as cancers. These cancers are coming. And the thing that the vaccine did was to destroy your natural immunity and replace it. But it gave you immunity for COVID. Well, it was supposed to, but it obviously didn't even do that, while you were open to any other kind of disease and cancer and all of that. And it just makes me sick to even say that now, because how many people now are still coming down with things and dying when they didn't have to? They didn't have to, but they took the vaccine. They took the boosters. I know that's upsetting to many of you listening to me, and I apologize for that. But don't you think you need to know, just so that it never happens again, so that next time a vaccine comes around or some disease, you're not so cavalier about taking it, not so cavalier about believing the news media? I just think if we've learned anything, it should be that. And Bruce, one of the things that I said in passing, and this was personal to us, was the demonizing of treatments that actually worked. And that was ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. What can you say about that?
Well, I can tell you that when I was in the hospital in a COVID ward, you know how they have the board at the foot of your bed that shows what medicines you're on, and I was on remdesivir.
And it's a terrible drug, which I didn't know at the time.
And this was maybe 2 days in. I ended up in the hospital for 6 or 7 days, but this is about the second day in, and I am not getting better. I am getting worse, I think. And like Sandy said, she could not come and see me. You know, I did not have an advocate inside the hospital. It's just, the status quo, the protocol that was recommended by the government on how to treat you. But I had talked to the nurses that were treating me, and they were dressed like they were ready for a World War I gas attack. I mean, huge masks, all kinds of gowns and gloves and everything. But in talking to them, only about 60% of them, or I should say less than 60% of them, were vaccinated.
You asked them that, didn't
you? I asked them a question. I said, are you vaccinated? And they'd kind of go, no, but they didn't want to talk about it, but they were not vaccinated. So what happened is, you know, Sandy, you know the story. She advocated for me with our doctor, who we didn't know. We were assigned to him when I went into the hospital. And she begged him to give me ivermectin. And she got it and gave it to him, and he administered it. And as I was laying there, in came the head doctor of the virology or whatever you would call it in the hospital. It's the infectious diseases. He was in charge of infectious diseases. And he read me the riot act about getting ivermectin. And he was so angry, and he said, this is just because some president says it works. That's why we have to give it to you. But I can tell you that within 2 days of getting the ivermectin, I did a total turnaround. As Sandy said, the next day they were going to put me on, I don't know if you call it the ventilator or the respirator, whatever was killing people. It seemed like once you went on the ventilator, that was it. You didn't walk out of the hospital. And there was a man that went in the same day as me, and we had basically the exact same symptoms. He was younger than me. He was in good shape. He did not receive ivermectin, and he died. He died while I was there. And this is personal to us, but it also is, we've done the studies on this, and this really does seem like it was based on what the protocol for treating people really seems like it was based on what would make money for people. And hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were very generic drugs at that point. They've
very
been out
cheap.
For years.
Cheap.
Very cheap. No one's going to make money off of this. But remdesivir and other treatments were newer and were still not, they were not in the generic phase. They were very, very profitable to these hospitals. And another thing that really piques your interest, why is the government paying money big money to these hospitals who have COVID deaths and treat COVID people. It just made no sense.
Well, just to repeat, some people might not know, hospitals were receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars to when they labeled the death of a patient COVID. So things that were happening is like, there was a story, I think, about out of Ohio, a guy fell off a ladder, went into the hospital and died, and they called it a COVID, died with COVID. That's how they would put it. And there were tons of examples of that. And so they were using this, and they also made, I can't remember the fee, I think it depended on where you were in the country, they paid thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for hospitals to put people on respirators. And
I think it was like $30,000. That figure comes to mind.
So that's
like that.
What corrupted your doctors and your nurses. And the thing of it is, we know a lot of people in medicine and medical, and it was really hard for good people who spent their life in medicine trying to take care of people, who believed that the CDC was really the god of medicine in terms of information, like the Bible of medicine, I should say, and that the FDA and all of that were just sacrosanct. It was very hard for them. That was some of our strongest opposition when I would do this, these shows on the air, and friendships too. They would shut me down because they had a brother who was a doctor, they just closed off their minds. And then some willfully did it because they made money. And hospitals are corporations now, so they certainly did it. And doctors either had to go along with it or lose their jobs. So that's what happened. But there's more to this. Ivermectin was invented, I don't recall, 20 or 30 years ago. It's not that old of a drug. And it was called like the miracle medicine, something to that effect. Amazing drug that was so good at treating so many things. In fact, people say now, look, I don't know that this is true. I haven't tried it, but I've been told that it's good to stop cancer, prevent it or treat it or whatever. So that's how hydroxychloroquine has been around for 60 years. My good friend who was a missionary in Zimbabwe said they used to give it to their mission hospital, gave it to the Zimbabweans every Saturday. The Zimbabweans called it the Saturday pill, the natives. And it got rid of all kinds of illness. It was just like a generic treatment for everything wrong with you. But you recall that they made fun of hydroxychloroquine, and they called ivermectin the horse pill. I mean, all these media voices that you heard, man, they were all over it. But I want now for you to hear the truth about this. I've told you the truth about it, but it's better probably to come from RFK Jr., who is now the head of HHS and has all these declassified documents. And this is what he had to say about Fauci and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, clip 12.
Tony Fauci's problem is this. There is a little-known federal law that says you cannot give an emergency use authorization to a vaccine if there is any medication approved for any purpose that is shown effective against the target disease. So if Tony Fauci or anybody had admitted that hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin are effective against COVID, it would have been illegal for them to give the emergency use authorizations to the vaccines, and they could never have gotten them approved. And it would have been a $200 billion enterprise that would have collapsed. Well, the medical community, a lot of it was saying that. I mean, there's 17,000 doctors who've signed a petition, and there are so many peer-reviewed publications now that consistently say that, but he had to aggressively crusade against it to kind of drown out those reports by saying it's a horse medication, people are taking it and it's dangerous and it's overdosing people. And even if you have the emergency use authorization, the law appears to say you can't have it anymore if there's a functioning medication. That may be why. Again, I try not to look in his head, but I do. There's a very, very strong incentive for him to kill ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And, there are many doctors, including Harvey Reich of Yale, who is one of the leading biostatisticians, epidemiologists in the world, Peter McCullough, who is the most published doctor in the history of the world in his specialty, Pierre Corey, these doctors who've treated tens of thousands of COVID patients successfully, they consistently say, and the science supports this, that 500,000 Americans did not need to die.
So to capsulize that, what he's saying is they had to use emergency authorization to okay the COVID vaccine to go into the market because we didn't have time to do all the trials, and because people were, you know, according to the press and the videos we were seeing, which now we know was actually not even true. The videos that they showed us, some of them were manufactured. Others were coming from a hospital in Italy. They kept using that to show us how horrible things were, you know, in the United States. They played with our minds to make sure we would all go out and get that vaccine. And we couldn't have gotten that vaccine if we had used, we wouldn't have needed it, if we could have taken ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. But they demonized those cheap drugs so that they would get you to pay for these expensive drugs. And, of course, you didn't have to pay for the vaccine. But I guarantee you, your tax dollars paid for it, and many people paid for it with their lives. So that's how corrupt Dr. Fauci is and was. He's going to appear before Congress tomorrow. Now, Bruce, we have a lot of stuff, and we're going to know more tomorrow after that hearing. Tomorrow is July the 29th, by the way, just so that you know. Let me turn to you. What is one of the revelations that really stuck out? We have his diary now and some other things that we're learning about how he thought and what he was up to.
Well, one of the things is that he was absolutely in love with all the attention. He references being asked to go on Dancing with the Stars. He references being taken pictures with different people, being sought by everybody. You heard the clip to start the show. He was being absolutely fawned over. Can you imagine? He's called America's doctor. I mean, so you've got that aspect of it. I think you're going to find out that this gain of function, and let's explain gain of function, what that means.
Before you do that, can I interrupt you? Because I have an example of what you just said about his ego. I just want to read this. Okay, according to the released files, at one point Fauci wrote, "One person said that Tyra Banks was sexy, but that I was even more sexy than she was." Okay. In Style magazine, the cover for the magazine in September 2020 featured Fauci sitting by a pool, wearing sunglasses and a smug look on his face. So it goes on and on. I have a lot of clips about how he loved himself. He loved himself.
And think about this. This is a federal government employee. This isn't even what you'd call a private person. This is an employee of the government. And this is going on as people are dying, as there's all kinds of histrionics as to whether or not the vaccine works, how it should be tested. And he's out there taking pictures with people, being interviewed constantly. You know, we had the whole cast of characters, you know, Debbie Burks with her scarves and you know, Vice President Pence. I think that really was a low point for him. I understand there was a lot of uncertainty going on, but the deference to Fauci, you know, and the thing is, we've had history on Dr. Fauci going back to the 80s when AIDS came out, and we were trying to be convinced that AIDS could wipe out the entire world. And yet very few people were willing to say what was probably the cause of the spread of AIDS in the United States. And that was in the homosexual community, it was gay sex between men. And that was a huge spreader of that disease. But everyone completely hopped around that for the most part and said, we have to come up with a vaccine for this disease. Well, you know, I'm not against them trying to find a vaccine for this disease, but let's get real here. The driving force of the AIDS epidemic in America was sexual misbehavior by men for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing also, I actually did a show on this too 2 years ago, whenever that whenever that was. There was a whole documentary on Dr. Fauci using orphans. I believe it was in New York City. People, kids, children that nobody wanted. And he was experimenting on them with drugs for the AIDS virus, Bruce. And I remember the kids were having all kinds of terrible side effects. And they would beg. The medicine would make them sick. And they begged and begged not to be given, not to have it. And nobody would listen because this was all private. No one knew about it. It's just a horrific story. And that was Fauci, something we didn't even know about him.
You know, I always hesitate to try to label people. But if you look at Dr. Fauci, you want to make a combination of Dr. Mengele and Dr. Frankenstein. Dr. Mengele was the Nazi doctor who performed all kinds of horrific experiments on people, allegedly in the name of science, to determine like how cold you could make a person before they died, how much you could freeze them, how hot you could make them, doing surgeries on people without anesthetic. I mean, the most hideous things. And Dr. Frankenstein was trying to create life, really become God. And Dr. Fauci, when you look at his behavior, he's just like that. You know, I think what's going to come out in these, it may not come out tomorrow in the hearing, but eventually you're going to find out that really what this whole thing was is Fauci was taking U.S. tax dollars and funneling them to this Wuhan lab in China, and so they could do gain-of-function research. And gain-of-function is where you morph an organism and try to make it, if it's a virus, more virulent, more resistant,
more deadly,
and more deadly, more resistant to vaccine. And the U.S. has laws against that. So what he did is he diverted the money to Wuhan where they could do that. And what happened is, the virus, I believe, it will come out, because the CIA and the FBI have already pretty much backed this up, that this did not come out of a wet lab, a wet market in Wuhan, China. This came out of this virology lab in Wuhan, and it got loose. Somebody, you know, we don't know yet how it got out of there, whether it was intentional or accidental. I would bet it's intentional, because if you look at the timing of when COVID came out. It was 2020, December of 2019, and then 2020, it really got rolling. And Donald Trump was going to stand for re-election in 2020. And Donald Trump was killing the Chinese. He was taking their economy. He was stopping all this exportation of our businesses and things to China. He was really hurting China. And so, gee, coincidentally, where does this virus come out of? China. And I think what ultimately you're going to find out is, and I hate to use the word conspiracy because it's been bastardized now and people don't really know what a conspiracy is, but conspiracies can be real. And I think you're going to find out that this whole thing was basically a conspiracy between people in the vaccine community that stood to make money if they could find a cure for COVID. And so I think Fauci's part is going to be that he knew what was going on in this lab, and when people started to get sick, he knew he was vulnerable because he had let some of this.
Yeah, he authorized that gain of function.
So in order to cover himself, he started saying, we've got to come up with a vaccine. You've got to do this. He tried to get out ahead of it. Like, I'm going to be the guy who solves this problem, not the guy who caused this problem. And so, you know, he already has all these contacts with people in the vaccine business, and off they go. Now they've got an avenue to try to make money. And if you don't think he made money, go and look up the net worth of Dr. Anthony Fauci. At one point, he was worth $12.6 million. This is a guy who's been a public servant since, I think, 1984. His wife is also employed by the NIH. But his net worth was $7.6 million before COVID, and it went up to $12.6 million after COVID.
Bruce, back to, let me just interject this, back to his diary. This is an excerpt from it. Big front page article about me appeared in the Washington Post. Very flattering. The situation with my national and international fame is explosive and really unimaginable. It is not hyperbole to say that today I am the most famous and talked about person in the country and one of the most recognizable people in the world. Countless profiles on me in multiple media. I cannot even read all these things that are written about me since I am so busy. Seriously. POTUS seems to be very enamored of me, even though I am taking the spotlight away from him. We are developing a very unique and interesting relationship. The entire Secret Service Corps is coming over to me and chatting. They let me into the first gate even without checking ID. Everyone is worried about my health and welfare, probably because it is all over the place that I am almost 80 years old. So that's what Fauci's worried about. And also we would see, and I'm sure you've read this too, Bruce, in his diary, he spends a great deal of time talking about gain of function, meetings he had with the CIA, reports by the FBI, and meetings with other scientists that he convenes, trying desperately to bend their will towards saying that this did not originate in the lab. You know, they remember they wanted to say it was an animal in the local market. I mean, that he did everything. He bent over backwards to stop anyone thinking that it came from the lab. And I think it came from the lab. So did the FBI and so did the CIA. So.
Yeah, remember they tried to say it was from a bat.
Yeah,
That had gotten sick in the wet market. No.
Yeah. You know, Bruce, the other thing that I think needs to be mentioned, he and Jake Tapper, Jake became his, like, cheerleader, like, lapdog. Jake just loved Fauci. He had him on all the time. And now we know from Fauci's diaries that he and Jake became very, very close friends. And they'd eat at each other's homes, take their wives, and they just had a thing going, you know? So Jake Tapper is a newsman, and he's supposed to be telling us the truth, but instead he's fawning over Anthony Fauci at every opportunity. So people just need to know that, too.
You know, one thing that I wish would be investigated, and I've never heard anyone go into this, is that Dr. Fauci's wife, Dr. Christine Grady, was also working at the NIH while Fauci was there. And she was the head of what they call bioethics. So she's basically running interference for Fauci. You know, she's supposed to decide whether certain treatments, certain procedures are ethical. And there was a lot of questions about whether or not what Dr. Fauci was doing was ethical the entire time this COVID went on. Guess who's running interference for him? His wife. She's in charge. And no one ever talks about that. And I wish that that would be explored. I know that's a little off topic, but I wish that would be explored tomorrow. They should ask him about his wife.
Yeah. Well, maybe they will. I bet they won't leave any stone unturned. And there has to be some justice. Justice has to be done, whatever that looks like. And there's one other thing, Bruce, that I saw. Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey is, he's with Brownstone, I think, Institute. I just heard him in a briefing just last week. He's just excellent. He's been around a long time. I'm surprised I don't know him. I haven't known him. But I'm growing fond of him as I now get more accustomed to the things he's saying. But he posted this. He said, I'm making my way through that diary, but this entry is gigantically important. Gigantically important. What is that entry? This is from Fauci's diary. But, okay, let me set it up this way. I always wondered why President Trump, after I knew what I knew, chose Fauci. But Fauci was made a hero by all the people that you hear, all the illustrations we just gave you about how people fawned over him, really, before this even started. So he was like the guru of all things disease. And so I don't think President Trump knew him. Maybe he did have an acquaintance with him. I don't know that, really. But I always wondered, why him? And I'm sure there's somebody there, because in the 2016 term, 2016 through 2020 term of President Trump, there were so many people undermining him, including Mike Pence, who was the one charged with being over this, who got very buddy-buddy with with Deborah Birx and with Fauci. And at one point, you know, President Trump is the problem solver. So he thinks this vaccine, I'm extrapolating. I'm not reading this from anything. I just think that President Trump was desperate to save the American people. Does that make sense to anybody? I think so, because he's always trying to help the American people. And he's so compassionate. He truly is. He hates death. He is a compassionate man, and he sees this thing happening, and he wants to do something to stop it. So I'm sure he was very amenable to the introduction of some kind of a vaccine. So he was all in trying to make it happen. They expedited the regulations and all of that. And then suddenly he has a realization, and you'll see it in this notation. Now, what was the date? This was April 23rd of 2020. And this is Fauci's words. After the presser, about 1 hour, Deb Birx texted and then called me saying, "It was good that I was not there, since after the presser, the POTUS called her into the Oval and started yelling at her saying, 'You and Fauci have destroyed the country and the economy. I should never have listened to you. You have completely destroyed us.'" He goes on, this is the rest of his text. He kept saying this over and over again and was yelling at her. I encouraged her that we are okay, and at the end of the day, she and I will be loved by the people we care about. She was relieved, and after, wrote me a text sincerely thanking me. So even then, Bruce, it's all about him. But yeah, think about that.
Exactly. I was going to say, you hit it right on the head. It's all about him. People are dying left and right. If you remember, the economy was absolutely roaring. It had come back really strong. The stock market was going well. Unemployment was down. Interest rates were down. And that happened. And then COVID happened. And it really destroyed so much. I mean, you know, we cannot forget, as a result of Dr. Fauci's policies, schools were shut down. You know, he infamously contends that he had nothing to do with schools shutting down. But now that this diary is out, there's notations in there about him speaking to Bill de Blasio, who was then the mayor of New York City, and Gavin Newsom, who was the governor of California, and convincing them to shut down their schools. Think about it. They shut down our churches.
They shut down businesses. Yeah. Restaurants are still not closed. Yeah. They've gone out of business.
The restaurant business has been completely devastated as a result of COVID. But yet, strip clubs were allowed to be open. Liquor stores were allowed to be open. Target, certain Walmart was allowed to be open. There were winners that were picked by the government. Like, we're going to let your business stay open. We're going to close yours, even though there's not a lick of difference between them as far as interaction of people or social distancing, anything like that. It's just they had the political clout and you didn't. And that was a huge part of this.
Bruce, I'm sorry that I'm going to stumble here a little bit, but help me remember, didn't they say they allowed like strip clubs or massage parlors to stay open, but churches had to shut down?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then you saw the hypocrisy. Remember the infamous tape of Nancy Pelosi going to her hairdresser when no one else was allowed to go to people like that? And Gavin Newsom was attending these lavish dinners at people's homes. Well, they were on a complete lockdown in California. No one was allowed to hardly go anywhere. And he was pictured in these dinners with several people, you know, 20, 25 people, whatever.
Having a great time
and, you know, all sitting next to each other, no masks on. This is what happened as a result of Dr. Fauci and others, but primarily Dr. Fauci, having so much influence over how we handled the COVID situation.
You know, Bruce, and back to this quote of what Trump said, that was April of 2020. That was just, if I remember, March, April, that was just 4 months into this. And he's already figured out exactly what's happening. And by that time, you know, the economy had not been gutted yet, but it was in the process, and he could see that, and things have been going so well. And you notice that he does not say in this, "You and Fauci have destroyed me." He doesn't say that. I want to point that out. President Trump said, You, meaning Deborah Birx, and Fauci have destroyed the country and the economy. I should never have listened to you. You have completely destroyed us. And it's true. What he said is true, except President Trump then went into overdrive to get our economy back. And that's what's been happening.
Yeah, you know, I can see why from Fauci's point of view, once this started, you know, it's like when you get involved in something you shouldn't get involved in. You cannot get out. It just gets worse and worse. And so what do? You try to make it better for yourself. And I think, you know, to make this simple, that's what Dr. Fauci was doing, is he knew he was up to his eyeballs in the cause of the COVID pandemic, which was juicing up those viruses in that lab in China with funds from the U.S. that he had illegally diverted there. And now it's out, and now people have it, and now it's running wild, and I got to do something to cover my tracks,
yes,
and yeah, try to look like a hero.
Yeah. So I hope that that explains me on the eve of that hearing in Congress where Dr. Fauci, the biggest danger for him, oh, I'd love to see it happen, is that he might lie under oath. He has done that before. So we'll see what he does tomorrow. And one last thing, Bruce, let me read this for you too. You might recall that when Joseph R. Biden Jr. was leaving the White House, he assigned an executive grant of clemency. And it says this, for Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, a full and unconditional pardon for any offenses against the United States, which he may have committed or taken part of during the period from January 1st, 2014, through the date of this pardon, arising from or in any manner related to his service as Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, as a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force or the White House COVID-19 Response Team, or as Chief Medical Advisor to the President. Full pardon. That going back to January 1st of 2014 from the auto pen.
Yeah, now you have to wonder, I mean, I'm speculating here, but you have to wonder when Fauci started diverting funds to that lab in Wuhan. Was it 2014? I don't think they just picked that year, that date out of the air. I'm sure there's a reason it went back that far. I'd be interested to know when they started funding that lab.
Yes, and also, Bruce, the whole AIDS thing that I mentioned, that whole thing that he did to those children, those orphan children, doing experiments on them in that hospital in New York City, that's a crime. That's, I don't know how you label it, Mr. Attorney, FBI agent. What kind of a crime would that be?
Well, I'd call it murder. I'd call it torture. I'd call it, aggravated battery. Yeah. There's so many things, attempted murder.
Yeah.
Are crimes, though.
It does look like somebody who was in the know wrote this for Fauci. You think Joe Biden knew all this stuff? I don't think so.
I think Fauci probably wrote it.
Probably wrote it for himself. I bet he did. He's really good at doing that. So all of this will come out in the hearing, I think, tomorrow on July the 29th, and I hope that you'll be watching it.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how Dr. Fauci approaches these questions. You know, and now he's been pinned down to various different stories throughout time when he's testified under oath before Congress, and then he's given statements. He's either going to really, really be trying to thread the needle tomorrow and be very vague, or you might even see him take the Fifth Amendment, because, you know, now he is out of reach of law. And I'm going to speak as a lawyer now. A smart person would take the Fifth Amendment tomorrow because he has nothing to gain, really, by trying to talk his way out of this. I think people that love Dr. Fauci, they love him now. People that don't love him, don't love him now, and it's never going to change. But knowing him, he has such an ego. I think he's going to try to go in there tomorrow and really spin this whole thing without hard facts, but more of an ideological spin. Like, I love this country. I was so scared for this country. I think he's going to make himself out to be a hero. He's going to try to say, I came to the rescue. I don't know why you people are picking on me. Because he has consistently called Rand Paul a liar and that he's just after him. And I'll tell you what, Rand Paul is going to be after him tomorrow. And it will be interesting. I think Tony Fauci will try. You know, he's one of those people that just can't stand to, you know, be put down at all. I think he's going to try to thread that needle and make himself out the hero.
Well, I personally think, I've said this before, I think there should be a Nuremberg trial, something like that. For all the doctors and all the nurses, people who, with knowledge, actually forced, persuaded, bribed, whatever, people to take the vaccine, and also then gave them terrible treatment after they came down with COVID. We can attest to that. They let people out of the hospital who were not healthy, not well. They got improper medication or no medication at all. It's just a tragedy. And what do we take from this? I would say this to all of you. This is my advice. Doctors and hospitals and all kinds of entities, pharmacies, are still pushing the COVID vaccine. How dare they? And by the way, they all made money too. And I think it would be really, really good if people would speak up. You don't have to be rude, but you can be angry. You know, this is a thing to be angry about. And so I would challenge them. We just have to challenge them and get them to stop this, because Mayo Clinic has been so smug about this, so smug and unrepentant. And that's one of the biggest in the nation in terms of teaching hospitals well-respected. They lost my respect when they did this. And so I'm just telling you, we got to stand up and not let this happen again. And also, another thing is, for some of you who it's new to you, that the media is lying to you almost all the time these days. Not all media, but much of the mainstream media. Newsmax, some hosts on Fox are still honest, but they're not all. I'm just telling you, their editorial department is very much to the left, very much more like NBC or ABC. But the hosts, a lot of them are more conservative. It's a business model. So the Rupert Murdoch's son, who's very liberal and runs the company now, wanted to let it go to the left, and they tried that for a while, and it backfired. So they've come back to the right because it makes more money. But they are still doing really bad things, and so you have to be discerning. Newsmax is still on the money for telling the truth. OAN, One America's Network, is doing a great job. Real America's Voice, and I'm sure there are others, but I can't rattle them off in this moment. But you're going to have to. It's going to be more work for you to be an informed citizen. You can't be lazy like we have been, because we thought we could trust our news outlets, but we couldn't. We couldn't. They've been lying to us about so many things. So be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. That's my admonition. Honey, thank you for joining me.
Hey, and just on a personal note, honey, I know many of your listeners prayed for me and prayed for you when I had COVID. And I'm telling you, it made a difference. And I am still so humbled by it. I'll have people tell me, oh, I prayed for you. I just can't tell you what that meant.
Thank you, honey. Me too. I can't tell you what that meant to me either, those of you who did pray for us. And Bruce is still with me, only by God's grace and by your prayers and God's grace. Well, all right, honey, thank you so much. Thank you for living, I tell you that. I'm very grateful for that.
I'm glad to be here.
And thank you all for listening. By the way, remember that Preborn is our sponsor. And if you would like to help them to provide an ultrasound for a mom who's confused about carrying her child, go to preborn.com/Sandy, preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.